It's time for the Talent Talk Radio Show, brought to you by People G2, a nationwide leader in background checks and employment screening solutions. People G2 gives their clients access to the best human capital management and due diligence tools available. They are dedicated to helping their clients with all of their people-related decisions. To learn more, go to www.peopleg2.com. Talent Talk centers on the topics of talent recruitment and management, leadership development, company culture, and employee engagement. These are all timely topics for CEOs, entrepreneurs, HR professionals, and business leaders. We hope that as you tune in to listen each week, whether to the live broadcast or to the podcast on iTunes or iHeartRadio, that you hear something you can take away that will help you grow and impact your career in a positive way. And now, here's the host of the Talent Talk Radio Show, the founder and CEO of People G2, Chris Dyer.
Good afternoon, and thank you for tuning into Talent Talk, whether it's live on the air, on LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, wherever you find us, YouTube. I'm super excited to have everyone here today. And, you know, for 2022, we've been kind of doing things a little bit different. We've been slowing down, kind of focusing in on one guest, sometimes two, and maybe doing a few less shows this year, just sort of given my travel schedule, work schedule, and all of that. But, you know, for years, we did two people every Tuesday. And I can tell you after 5-6 years of doing that, or maybe it's even more, slowing down a little bit wasn't so hard to do. So, but I'm glad we're back on the air here today. So if you like us, if you like the people we talk to, if you like the stuff we talk about, what's most important is to make sure that you are connected somewhere, wherever you feel like interacting with us and all those different platforms. Find us or find me and make sure you connect. That way you get alerted to when a new show or new content is thrown out there. It's nice when the algorithms do the work for you and you don't have to even think. So, you know, as I mentioned, we've been doing the show for so long. I said so many fantastic stories, amazing guests, people who are dealing with their talent or are uniquely talented themselves. And very often those two things are not exclusive to each other. And they have so much to teach us. And I've been really fortunate to be able to include a lot of those stories in my first best-selling book, The Power of Company Culture, as well as my second best-selling book, Remote Work. So if you're interested in those topics, culture, or how to have a flexible workforce, you know where to find it, probably on Amazon or wherever you buy your books, you can do that. Now, we are live every Tuesday, 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. So you can always find us on LinkedIn Live, OC Talk Radio, TuneIn, like I said, YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, all those great places to interact. And if you'd like to kind of get your questions answered live or have some interaction live, I think LinkedIn's probably the best place to do that. But wherever you find us, throw us some questions. We'll keep answering or interacting with you there. Now, my guest today will be Sean Burcham. He's the founder and CEO of PFS Brands, a 100% employee-owned company. I'm not sure. We've had a whole lot of companies that were 100% employee-owned. So this will be an interesting thing for us to kind of talk about. And they've got the core purpose of helping others become more successful in work and life. I mean, what else could you ask for, right? He's also an author of Keeping Score with Grit, Straight Talk Strategies for Success. So let's go ahead and get started today. Sean, thank you for being a part of the show.
Chris, thanks for having me. Congrats on all your success, and it's a pleasure to be on the show. Looking forward to talking to you.
Yeah, well, why don't you first kind of let's dive into you. Tell us a little bit about your background, how you got where you are today. What's important for us to know about our conversation to kind of, you know, give us that good foundation to keep going?
Yeah, I'll go all the way back to childhood. You and I were talking just a little bit before we went live. So I grew up as a kid with a speech problem until I was 8 years old. My parents didn't realize I lost 50% of my hearing and didn't have 50% of my hearing. So you can imagine as an infant growing up, not hearing most of the sounds, I wasn't very good at talking and didn't like to talk in front of people. So ironic that I'm sitting here talking to you on a radio podcast today. And even more ironic that I wrote a book and published a book that became an Amazon bestseller. Because I just hated reading and writing and those types of things growing up as a kid. Long story short, I'm an entrepreneur that started out of my garage, not much different Those of us that have lived this life, we don't think we're much different than other entrepreneurs. Having said that, I've recognized over the last 15 years how unique entrepreneurs are, and I feel good to be in that class of people. But we started in our garage and grown a company that's over $100 million and ultimately have become a very unique 100% employee-owned company. Our company, PFS Brands, goes out into supermarkets and convenience stores all across the country, and we put branded food programs inside supermarkets and convenience stores. So any franchise brand that we have typically is offered inside a supermarket or convenience store, which sometimes is the reason we're not necessarily a household name, because we don't physically have any brick and mortar stores. However, we do have now close to 2,000 branded locations across the country. So it's a real testament to the employee-owned team here, what we've been able to accomplish, and just glad to be on the show.
So maybe kind of explain to me, did you start off employee-owned? Was that always the vision, or did you start off in one direction and then decide that that was something you wanted to do?
Yes, really just started out as an entrepreneur that I think the best way to state it is I wasn't very good at working for other people. Wanted to be my own boss, and got a college education and worked for a Fortune 100 company, worked for a very small company, saw both sides of the spectrum, and really just loved the small company side of being able to call my own shots and wanting to do something on my own. So my wife and I, as we had our first child, we had decided prior to marriage that she wanted to be a stay-at-home mom, and I supported that. It was how we were both raised, right or wrong. There isn't one, but that's just how we were raised. And we had our first kid. I quit my job, so we became a double income, no kid family, and went from that to a no income, one kid family, literally in the same year. So not very smart, kind of young and dumb, in love, and just said we'd figure it out and make it work. And she had a lot of confidence in me. So as far as the employee ownership, I really didn't have a vision for that until probably 13, 14 years into the company, as I got to really understand that employee model, and we became a big part of our small community here. I really appreciated what all of the employees have done. There's some tax advantages to a 100% employee-owned company. You put all those things together, the employee ownership model and giving everybody some type of a stake in the outcome of what they do is just really intriguing to me, and I think it creates more capitalism. So those are some of the high-level reasons that we went to the ESOP model.
And how big is the team now? You mentioned you have 2,000 locations for a big $100 million operation, but what does that sort of employee size look like?
Yeah, we don't operate any of our locations, so we're all a licensee and a franchisee mm-hmm. model. So all of those operators are independent operators out there, so those employees are not ours. We actually, as a company, just crossed over the 200 employee owner mark.
Okay. Yeah, we're still a pretty big group. And, I think one of the things I found interesting in preparing for our conversation today is, given that you kind of went employee-owned and given that you have this connection to your team and the way in which you have really brought them up, I think I might have thought about your employees more as a family, right? And I think you would maybe categorize them more as a team, and maybe you could kind of explain more about that.
Absolutely. While we've taken a lot of pride in creating a family-like culture, when you think about family, first and foremost, you have to understand that everybody has come up through a different family environment. So from a self-awareness standpoint and awareness of others, quite frankly, sometimes you talk about a family, maybe their family experience wasn't very good. We have to realize that some people have had that. That certainly wasn't my experience, but I know a lot of people, both that work for us and I've met over the years, that they wouldn't necessarily want to say that they would want to create a family-like environment similar to what they grew up in. I think the other thing about family is most of the time in a good, strong family unit, people don't leave. Well, on a team, people leave. When you look at some of the best sports teams in history, even today, people leave. People come and leave. Take a look. I always like to refer to college athletics, where you've actually only got 4 years, right, plus or minus the COVID extensions that we've had. So we can put a little footnote on that one. But typically, you've got 4 years to groom and migrate people to whatever your team culture is. So I just like to refer to it as a team, a high performing team. They want high performance results. You don't always look at a family unit as a results oriented family. And everybody doesn't think of family that way. So we like to think about a high results type culture as being a good team.
Yeah, I think we probably all have a family member that we love and keep in the family because they're family. But if there was a business, they wouldn't be around, right? So I think keeping it as a team is really good, because that means you are just as responsible to everybody else, right? We're on a team. We need to be. There's a lot of cliche sayings, but we're only strong as our weakest link, or together everyone achieves more. I mean, there's a lot of these things that come out of that team atmosphere that I think in an organization is super important as you're growing. And to your point, there maybe it's not a four-year trajectory, but there is a trajectory for our employees. And that could be that they want to work and then they want to take time off and go have a family, or maybe they need to go take care of a sick parent or spouse, or maybe they're going to retire at some point, or, you know, there is an arc there. Whereas I guess the only way out of a family is divorce or death. So, it's a little different way to think about it.
Yeah, either way, the options aren't always that great, right?
Yeah.
Depending on how the divorce, maybe you could argue that one, but death, that's a pretty tough way to leave. So
I know, you know, you and I probably both like to use the sports analogies when talking about culture or teams and team culture. Do you have some favorites that you like to use to kind of get that message across?
Yeah, just as far as a favorite team or?
As far as, the analogies towards creating a good team, kind of using the sports, I guess, as a reference point. I mean, we talk a lot about, who's on the floor, right? So, that's sort of a basketball kind of a analogy at times we'll talk, because you could be on a team, right? But only so many people can actually be doing the work at one time. Do you guys use some of those things to kind of help your teams operate?
Yeah, I think the biggest one for me, and you mentioned my book, Keeping Score with Grit. Keeping score is the big analogy that we use. Jack Daly has become a mentor, a friend of mine over the years. I love one of the things Jack says. It's most sports teams are run better than most businesses. And you think about that, that's true. And sports teams get time off. They get an off season. Businesses don't have an off season in most cases. Yeah. I mean, we're working for four quarters and we start the first quarter right after the end of the fourth quarter. But that keeping score is something that traditionally I see a lot of businesses not doing, very much like whether it's a shooting percentage or a batting average or anything sports analogy, your stats are plastered up there for the fans to see, right? We do that as a business. We put scoreboards up all over the place, and we encourage people to hold themselves accountable through their own scoreboards, and we help them as leaders put those scoreboards up. So with every scoreboard, you need to be able to look at that scoreboard and be able to process the information in 3 to 5 seconds maximum to know what's going on in a particular department or within the company.
That might be the first time we've sort of thought about this concept on the show about on a sports team, you have time off. There's a physical component to that, to be able to recuperate, to be able to go back and hone in on your skills, right, in practice, to be ready for that next season. But you're right, it's not something that we typically do, especially not in the United States. With our staff. I mean, there's a lot of European countries, people have far bigger gaps of time off, where that may be true. So do you guys have to go back and do you advocate for people to take their time off and really make sure that they are getting at least some gaps and some time to be able to be with family and to rest and to do that?
Yeah, I think that's important. You can certainly take that to extremes, in my opinion, but paid time off, that time to recharge, some of those types of things are important for everybody as they go through work. I really do think it's important for everybody to take some time off and recharge, especially given the environment that we've lived through these past 2 years, especially those of us in the supply chain world, the supply chain challenges, the inflationary pressure, some of those types of things. If you're in a forward-facing, customer-facing, purchasing, vendor-facing position, you're getting beat up every day. And a lot of it is out of your control. So we have to focus on the things that we can control. And at the same time, doing those things it takes to recharge. And sometimes that's not necessarily taking time off. It's finding ways to energize yourself to be in a positive frame of mind every single day. And that's been extremely important over these past couple of years, whether you like to get up and exercise in the mornings, or you exercise in the evenings, or you're a radio listener, a podcast listener, a music listener, you like to play a musical instrument, whatever it is, find that thing that gets you into a positive frame of mind, ideally first thing in the morning, so you can at least come, especially if you're a leader, and be in a great frame of mind to set the framework.
Yeah, and that framework and that sort of system is so important, and not only for your daily sort of mental health, but I have been talking a lot with leaders about this lately, that we've noticed sort of a lack of boundaries around time off with their staff, right? And so you have staff showing up even when they're technically off to meetings and to things, because it's now easier. They can just hop on a Zoom, right? They didn't have to drive into the office, but they said, well, I know I have this week off, but I thought I could just hop on this call real quick, right? And they're allowing some of that, which sort of shows everybody else, well, you're on vacation, you better be showing up for important meetings too, right? Or we don't value your time off. We don't value your opportunity to de-stress. So I've been encouraging leaders to be really strict about, hey, we don't want you on. If you're off, you're off. If you're on, you're on, right? And be really clear and create a good system. We had to create some funny kind of things to help people do that. I mean, I never had to do it, but I used to walk around telling people they're on vacation. If they were wired, they were fired. You know, I did not want them on their phone or their Outlook doing work, right? I mean, what's the point of being off if you're not really going to be off all the way? But I think everyone's got to kind of find that balance. And you're right. The COVID time has kind of changed us a little bit and created some interesting new realities, I think, for leaders they really have to think through. Were there any others that you and your team had to kind of think through to, I guess, keep it going, or to maybe adjust and adapt for what maybe that future of work looks like for you?
As far as the challenges with COVID?
Yeah.
Yeah, again it's certainly the remote work and that type of thing, no different than probably any other business leader that you've talked to over the past 2 years. Everybody had to shift and pivot and do things as far as remote work. Again, I think the next biggest challenge for us, Chris, has been the supply chain. That has just been brutal for those of us in supply chain, especially when you get into refrigerated, frozen, perishable type food products. Gets even more complicated. So, again, at the end of the day, no different than coming back to a huddle, or coming off the field from offense to defense, or coming in off the basketball court from playing out there. Hey, we got to talk about the things that we can control, right?
Yeah.
So, again, I just love to revert back to that sports analogy and continue to try to make sure that people aren't complaining about the things and wasting time and breath and energy and oxygen on things that they can't control. Instead, let's shift that to a positive frame of mind and use everything as an opportunity to move toward what we can control. And no doubt that's been a challenge over the past couple of years, but from a leadership perspective, we've got to keep that positive frame of mind when we're trying to encourage people what they need to be doing with their own lives and even their personal lives.
You know, if there's a leader out there who's maybe looking at hiring or transforming their company or whatever it may be, and trying to have more grit inside the organization, because I really like that you have focused on that term in one of your books. Grit is one of those things that seems a little overlooked. There's a few other, you know, words. There's grit. These are kind of like they're older words, which I find interesting, but, you know, I like finding people with grit. I like finding people with gumption, there's certain personality types that if you can find them, I think they ultimately become Jedis. So we go to the Star Wars, analogies, but they become these types of people who can do anything, right? You could throw them in customer service, and next month you need them to be the head of sales. They could be the head of sales. Next month you need to be the head of operations. They'll figure it out, right? Those kinds of people that will keep working until they figure it out. So what advice do you have for people who are looking to bring in more grit into their organizations?
Maybe take a look at a book called Top Grading by Brad Smart. Top Grading is a great book. I'm sure you've looked at that. Angela Duckworth has a book entitled Grit that is one of my favorites. She talks about how grit is important in kids. At the end of the day, Chris, you have to look for it. You have to find ways to look for it throughout your entire interview process. And you can do that through personal assessments. You can do it through career history forms, actually above and beyond a resume, having them answer some key questions around your core values. And you can certainly have your interview questions and all of your leaders skilled in asking the right interview questions to make sure that you're finding that type of individual. And that is really what we look for in our company, is a highly, call it a gritty person, a highly competitive person, somebody that can tolerate change and move and shift and pivot. When you're in a fast growing organization, you have to have those type of people. So those are some different ways that you can find them.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's important. And you made a great point about you have to identify it. You have to figure out how you're going to put it in place, how you're going to go figure out who can be that way. And, you know, there's definitely probably more to do on the hiring side if you want to bring that into your culture. But there certainly is a lot of training we can do. We can help people to learn how to do some of this. I mean, there are not every trait, not everything is just you show up with it. I think people can be given the tools and training to be a little bit more adaptable, be a little bit more competitive, figure out, because maybe they just didn't learn it. You said, this is not a family, because not everyone grew up the same way. Not everybody had the same upbringing, the same family structure, you know, and so we can't possibly expect that they're going to fit into exactly our definition of what that is, which is why a team kind of makes a lot more sense. We all come with different skills and people will learn those. And if not, then maybe you can graduate them on to something else.
Yeah.
And bring in somebody else. Yeah.
Yeah, that's definitely part of our grit philosophy. So grit for us is spelled with two T's. It's goal-driven, responsible, involved, team, and the most important T is tolerance of failure. That tolerance of failure and that goal-setting mindset is something I've found, Chris, over the years that most people did not grow up with that and don't have that goal-setting mindset. In fact, Gallup will tell you that less than 17% of the United States population set goals.
Wow.
So, and even more important is about one half of 1% of those people write their goals down. And just teaching people about the fact that if you just simply write your goals down, you're 50% more likely to achieve them. And getting them into a goal setting mindset and a mindset of writing them down and tracking them and keeping score, that shifts just in and of itself. That's one very small piece that can transform your company if you put together metrics and a way for them to keep score and a way for them. I like to not say leaders hold them accountable, while ultimately that's what we do. But when you really get to the utopia of that type of a culture, when you've got a great team, you have found people that like to hold themselves accountable. And that's what's awesome, because you get to a point where, man, it's not a leader now. Now we just got people that they're just driven to hold themselves accountable and create new metrics and set new bars and set that bar higher in our company in particular, because we have a tolerance of failure. Because if you don't have that tolerance of failure, people are going to set goals at a low level and they're going to achieve those goals more frequently versus pushing themselves to get outside the box and maybe set a goal that they may not hit.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's really, really important. And, you know, if we can figure out how to help our people set goals, it's a little bit less important about what their goals are. To your point, just setting some goals, starting that process, being accountable to those goals, trying to work towards them. I will set them up to try new things, to push themselves, to work harder, to ask for help and ask, you know, good questions, as opposed to, well, I'm just going to hope I don't get in trouble today. I'm just going to show up to work. I'm going to clock in. I'm going to clock out. And out I go, get my paycheck. And then we wonder why we don't have a great engaged workforce, right? We have to help them, help themselves understand what they really want, where they want to go, and how do they fit into the organization, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And from the goal setting process, I think there's two different things that happen to people they either feel that they can't accomplish that goal, just the negativity and the pessimism that begins to kick in, and they continually lower that goal, or on the reverse side, they start getting too much into the detail, and they start trying to figure out, before they even set the goal, they start figuring about how they're going to get there. So you talk about teaching people how to set goals. Number one, believe and don't think about the how. Set your goal out there and then come back and figure out how you're going to get there later. And in fact, maybe put a team around you that's going to help you figure out how, but put the benchmark out there and believe that you can do it. That will begin to change over time, especially again, as you have a culture that has a tolerance of failure.
So what for this year, what are some of the, do you have a big priority now that we're kind of coming out of COVID? Seems like maybe things might be a little better. I know you have supply chain issues like everybody else who deals with the supply chain. I know we're all a little bit worried about inflation and things like that. But, you know, is there sort of a priority right now, something that your organization is really looking to do or become or to solve?
Yeah, we've got two. Well, we've got about five or six big goals. We do that every year. We keep it to about five or six. I won't go through every one of them. One of the biggest is we're trying to go from that business within a business segment to selling to freestanding or standalone franchise locations. So that's big for us as a company. That's gonna transform the company, and we'll become more of a household name with our brands. So that's a big one. The second biggest initiative for us is to help our operators maintain profitability and create better profitability for our franchisees and licensees. Given all of the supply challenges that we have had, we continue to have the inflationary things that we're having, we're doing everything we can to try to maintain relationships with our franchisees and licensees and help them be more successful, which flows right into our core purpose. And in order to do that, they have to be profitable. And they're facing a ton of challenges out there, not only with those that we've mentioned, but also labor challenges. So that's our biggest initiative of helping every single franchisee and licensee that is committed to get through this and figure out the best way to move forward.
Well, a lot of those things, I'm glad you understand the business, because you'll be able to come up with great solutions. And I know you have a great team to help you get there. I think probably out of all the ones you listed, only one I thought, well, I might know something about that. So you've got a lot to deal with, which is part of the fun about being in the business and being an entrepreneur. And I think if history is any indication, you'll have continued success. And I really appreciate you being on the show with us today and sharing your knowledge and sharing about your company and your books. This is the kind of thing we love to do, to kind of really learn from someone else who's done a great job and is running a great company. If people want to find out more about you, about your books, maybe they want to work for you, maybe they want to become a franchisee, whatever that may be, what's the best way for them to find out more about you?
Yeah, I'll give you about three different options. So number one, about me personally, go to www.Shawn, S-H-A-W-N, last name is Burcham, B-U-R-C-H-A-M. So www.SeanBurcham.com. Type on Amazon, Keeping Score with Grit. You can learn about my book there. And if you want to learn about our company and our companies, you can go to www.PFSBrands.com or GritBusinessCoaching.com. Grit with two T's, GritBusinessCoaching.com.
Fantastic. Well, again, thank you so much for being on the show today and sharing all your fantastic insights. I'd love to have you come back on the show at some point and give us an update on all the cool stuff you're doing.
Chris, thank you for your time, and I appreciate being on your show. And again, congrats on all the success. Thanks for what you're doing.
All right, thank you as well. Thank you, everyone, for tuning into today's show. Hopefully you've gained something you can use in your own career in a positive way. Until next time, do what you love and show the world how talented you can be today.
You've been listening to Talent Talk Radio, brought to you by People G2.